Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Hello again on Circles of Change. It's a pleasure to make a call. Here we have to Washington, D.C. area with Ann Laura. Ann, how are you today?
Great, thank you. How are you?
Terrific. Well, let me explain who our guest is. Ann is named the Generational Guru by the Washington Post, and her insights into effectively building globally diverse teams give her clients a leading edge. Working with firms such as the U.S. Air Force, Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney, American Red Cross, Johns Hopkins University, and John Hancock, Ann consistently helps leaders improve their communications and deepen their working knowledge to impact strong staff relations, improved employee retention, and increased sales. Quite the triumvirate. Ann is also award-winning co-author of A Manager's Guide to Coaching, and her works have been featured in Newsweek International, The Washington Post, National Geographic, Traveler, Elle, and CNN Money. A member of the National Speakers Association, she speaks regularly at national conferences and on the radio, as she'll do today. She lives in Washington, as I mentioned, with her husband and daughter, and she co-wrote the new book, our topic today, called Managing the Unmanageable, How to Motivate Even the Most Unruly Employee, with her colleague Jezra Kay, who's president of Speak Up for Success. So, unmanageable employee, Ann, what does that mean?
An unmanageable employee, Zara, is someone that we define as someone who exhibits constant, repeated, unproductive behavior. Everybody can have a bad day, bad week, even a bad month due to personal issues, things that are going on. But if someone is repeating constantly unproductive behavior, that is what we call an unmanageable employee, or as we term, a UE.
A UE. And in fact, your point is they almost do it so consistently that you can predict it, right?
Exactly.
And the UEs, as you said, I'm thinking this is ultraviolet light, right? UE, that, you know, many times some of us will try to jump to the conclusions that there's some deep psychological thing going on here. And I have a hunch that's not only the direction, though, you're going to consider when you say, what's our challenge now in dealing with these people, helping them through it, or also buffeting around them at the right time, whether it be team behavior or, you know, larger organization situations.
Exactly. Many people say to me, are UEs made or born? And I always say, predominantly, despite those incorrigibles who really are unfit to work in the workplace, most UEs are actually made, mm-hmm. especially when they're in an organization that has strategic change, as you know, and as the listeners know, Zara. Strategic change means there needs to be cultural shifts that go with that change. In our economy, Lord knows how many strategic changes there are going on in every organization. And sometimes a UE can't keep up with those shifts, and that can start the beginning of the snowball of a UE.
Well, and I wouldn't say just the employee, but their supervisor, their sponsor, mentors, their peers. So, you know, some of this isn't this kind of almost a group dynamic, even though it might get spotlighted amongst that one individual that might be just ridden in fear, though they wouldn't know how to speak to that.
Exactly. Many people say to me, well, when are you going to write the next book? And I kind of look at them blankly, like, which next book? And they're like, well, how to manage the unmanageable boss, and how to manage the unmanageable client, and how to manage the unmanageable partner. And as you say, it's all part of the group dynamic. And it's what we call the canary in the coal mine, Zara. And what we mean by that is, you know, if the canary dies in a coal mine, the miner knew that there's something toxic in the air.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing in organizations, as you know, that there can be toxicity. Some employees are more sensitive to it than others. And it takes a strong leader to not pinpoint and pigeonhole that UE and say, you're the problem, but to say, I wonder if there's something bigger going on. Let me take a look at this.
Yeah, give us an example, because I think you're absolutely right that this isn't, or many times you think that, well, if I deal with that one problem employee, voila, the issue goes away. And you find out, no, it doesn't. In fact, it might get accelerated.
Exactly. So I can think of one client that I work with right now, and it was a nonprofit based here in D.C., and the director called me and said, really want you to look at this one employee. He's my problem child. He's the department manager. Really want to let him go. Don't think there's any hope, but this is what I want you to do, just that I look good on HR's, you know, paperwork.
I've heard that one before.
Exactly. And so as we looked at it, everybody pointed to this person, and they all said, well, he's unproductive, he's not getting things done, he's stepping on people's toes. And as you know, Zara, people often present us with the symptoms. And so I said, well, that's the symptom. What's the root cause? And as we looked at the root cause, what we saw was that the goals weren't clear, the roles weren't clear.
Yeah.
And those are systematic problems. And as I often say, because an organization is an ecosystem, if it's happening in one area, you can bet it's happening in all the other areas. Which is that person highlighted it first. And so in this example, once we realized that that was going on, of course we coached and worked with this individual. Then I also went back to the director and said, we need to look at structural changes here, because this person is actually a blessing in disguise for you, because he's the first one to exhibit these symptoms. I guarantee there's going to be others soon if we don't look at these issues.
Wouldn't you also realize that, okay, roles and responsibilities not being clear, goals not being understood, bought into, aligned, but there's a third factor, quite often I know I see in unmanageable employees, it has to do with the fact we've got them fit in the wrong job. That it isn't. It isn't that they don't have the skills, perhaps. I mean, they might really be able to do that accounting job, nuts and bolts, backward, forward, produce the charts, make the presentation. But they go home every night dying inside because they fundamentally don't want to be an accountant.
Absolutely. So that's a huge issue that sometimes managers aren't even aware of. I mean, how many times have you worked or someone on this show worked in a job that has nothing to do with their college degree? And so they perhaps studied geology or something exciting in college, and now, as you say, they're accountants because it was safe. Well, immediately you're going to know that that may become a UE if someone doesn't look at it and say, are you in the right organization here?
And sometimes that, particularly in this day and age, that takes some real courage to raise those concerns at a time when, obviously, unemployment being what it is, and a concern of if I voice my dissatisfaction, that I then become put on a different list.
Exactly. And the other way that this could happen as well with organizations, if they're growing really fast, there are some organizations, despite our economy, that are just growing really, really fast. And someone who started off in the beginning of that startup phase may no longer be a right fit for where the company is now. So there's lots of things to consider, and yet it's so easy for a manager to say, Mary's the problem, fix Mary. And there's a Dire Straits song I always refer to that says, if you point one finger forward, there's three pointing back at you.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's take a look at what's going on in the organization. Mary may need some coaching, may need some guidance, and let's take a look at the bigger picture here, because as you know, UEs cost organizations a lot of money. The Gallup organization says that there's 22 million actively disengaged employees who are costing the U.S. economy as much as $350 billion a year.
And if you look
that's
at that from if you look at that from a percentage standpoint, that's 16% of people in organizations. And then if you also step back at the same poll, that 52% are not engaged in their job. So you go from not engaged to completely disengaged, and that's a huge part of the populace. So any UE is something we have to address. You know, your book, Anne, is make this very clear to our listeners, Managing the Unmanageable, How to Motivate Even the Most Unruly Employee. This is as much a guide, though, for us as individuals to master our own destiny, I'll say, as well as to help and coach our peers. It isn't just about that all-knowing supervisor, you know, that you as a coach are brought in, you know, under their guidance to go coach somebody. This is a lot of self-empowering information so we can spot it ourselves.
Exactly. And in the book, we have lots of tools and worksheets and hot tips. So this works for UEs, and it also just works for that employee who's good and you want them to be great. This framework that we came up with, we call it the 5 C's, helps any employee, especially the UE. However, if you just have some employees who think, you know what, I think they could be superstars, this book will help them as well.
So take us through those 5 C's before we run out of time. Here we go.
Sure. So the 5 C is a framework that we came up with so it would be memorable and easy. Now, I didn't necessarily be easy to implement, but easy to remember. So the first C is called commit or quit. And this is the only place where the manager actually does the work without the employee. And the manager actually has to complete our cost-benefit worksheet. We call it our What's It Worth worksheet, which has the numbers and the metrics as well as space for essays to really think, am I willing to commit to this employee, to the time it's going to take to help this employee turn herself around? After that, we have step 2, which is communicate. This is where we start to engage the employee to say two things. One, we have a problem. And two, this is what the problem is. And again, as you know, based on our conversation about symptoms, the manager and the employee may have very different takes. So this conversation can sometimes be 2, 3, 4, 5 conversations before, one, the employee will admit there's a problem, and two, will admit what the problem is. And once we have clarity on that, then we can go to clarify, which is the third C. And that's talking about the goals and the roles. Most organizations, if we can just get clear on the individual, the departmental, and the organizational goals and roles, automatically you're going to start to have a huge shift where people aren't stepping on each other's toes and that type of thing.
Or you're going to get to those irritants and those mismatches, right, where there's that complete disconnect.
Exactly, exactly. So, again, all of these steps I'm going through very quickly, and these are going to be many conversations for each step as we go forward. Then step four is to coach, and this is where we're really having a conversation, because a UE is an inside job. There is no way if I say, Zara, I want you to stop grumbling, or Zara, stop being so negative, that anything is going to change. The UE has to change himself. And so at that point, that's why we have a coaching conversation rather than a directive conversation, to help that person start to see the impact of the problem they're having. That's the million-dollar question. What's the impact of your behavior on the team? What's the impact of behavior on your career? What's the impact of behavior on the organization? Again, many conversations, coaching them to find their own solutions. And then step five is create accountability. As you and I both know, this is about productivity, about metrics. We have goals we have to hit. And so helping the UE learn how to track goals, learn how to get those success wins under their belt, and this, again, is where the manager and the UE work together. Many people say, well, I'm a manager. Why do I have to track this person's goals? Well, to be
I hire the best people, so why should I have to be concerned about that? Well, conditions, particularly as you teed up earlier, in a significantly changing environment, there's very few people that go untouched into not falling into some element of uncertainty.
Exactly.
You know, the whole UE challenge, the unmanageable employee, I was pulled in to coach a very senior person in an organization recently, actually for over a period of 8 months. And what became painfully obvious to me as I stepped through these steps, without maybe calling them as nicely as your book does, but I kept coming up into this big wall. And what it was the employee did not see his accountability in the situation. It was playing the blame game of everybody else. You know, why should I do this? You know, frankly, the CEO does this, so why should I have to? So part of our engagement here, this challenge and the tools that you provide, are as every bit about sensitizing the supervisor, right, to his or her role, skills, and maybe need for coaching to be able to coach someone else.
That's an excellent point. And we have 11 UEs in our book. They're all composites. None of them is like one of our clients. And the first one is actually what we call the excuse maker. Exactly what you're talking about, the person who plays the blame game. And as you say, it's awareness on the employee and awareness on the manager of how they did a dance together and how we need to now stop the dance and break the pattern.
Go through that list of 11. I think you guys, the excuse maker, the grumbler, I like that. We know that that's, you know, the people that are sitting up in the bleachers, they're not on the field with you.
We have 11, and again, they're composites. We have the excuse maker, we have the grumbler, we have the egomaniac. A lot of them are ones that people relate to immediately, so they can just pick up the book and say, oh my God, that's me, I've got an egomaniac. There's a few that are confusing for some people. One of them is what we call the do-gooder. And people are like, the do-gooder? How can that be a UE? And what we mean by do-gooder is someone who's always bringing the cookies, the birthday cakes, organizing the parties, the one that people go to talk to. And again, all behaviors are fine in moderation. It's when they get to the extreme that it could become a UE. So the do-gooder in extreme is becoming a type of HR manager, even though she may not be the HR manager, and then she's becoming this de facto role and not getting her own job
done. Yeah, that's the operative, not getting your own job done. And then what you find out is if a supervisor, you're trying to go put your finger on the problem, and you find out that actually to get to the data, you find out everybody else is doing her job because they like her so much or they appreciate these other softer things she does. But is that the right investment for the business?
Exactly, and that can be a challenge because she may say, but I'm the team player. What do you mean I'm doing something wrong? And everybody else may say, you're talking to her? I mean, everybody loves her. And yet, let's look at the metrics and the results, and what are we doing in our organization?
Yeah, I like the one that many of us think about, though, when it comes to the unmanageable, it's the slacker. You know, that they just ain't pulling their weight. And so what's with that? How have you gone in and, you know, talk us through how we help the slackers?
So the slacker is someone, as the name suggests, who, as you say, isn't pulling their weight, who, for whatever reason, shows up, does stuff maybe 70% if you're lucky, 50%, sometimes doesn't even completely show up, although that's more of the AWOL. And again, going through the 5C step, which can be used for anybody, what we often say is, well, communicate or quit. So let's assume that you've decided that you're going to commit to this person. So communicate. And communicate at this point is really about the problem is unmet goals. And then they say, oh, it doesn't matter. And you can obviously say and pull out the metrics. This is why everything needs to be in writing. Pull out the metrics. This is your job description. These are the goals. These are your quarterly goals when you break them down. How have you hit them? Let's look at last quarter. Let's look at the quarter before. So you have a roadmap in front of you.
But back to your...
Start the conversation.
But back to the very first nuance that you mentioned is, by investing some time and getting to the root cause of what was tripping up the slacker, you might find out is they have to constantly be in a hurry up and wait mode because the individual, the department that's supposed to apply them with the inputs, that they're not performing right. And they may not know how to articulate that or feel that they could raise that up as an issue.
And that, again, is why we both have said everything is systematic within an organization. So how do we look at the systems and the processes? So that's where three. So say we communicate, and that's the problem. I say, see, it's not my problem. It's their problem. It's like, okay, and let's look at step three, which is to clarify the goals and roles. Within that, what is your role? How do you communicate with that department? How do you make sure that things are happening? So you're always pushing the person forward. My hand is like leading someone forward. You're always saying, you can do it, go forward. I'm going to give you a little push. But between communication and clarify and coaching, that's how you create accountability to say, I know you're having a problem. Let's figure out your role and goal in here. Let's coach you how to have the conversation you need to have, not me, and let's create accountability with this person so that they can help you create your goals so that Q3 goals are on time.
Yeah, because in truth, actually, we're only as good as our weakest link. So we as a community need to support an individual, or like you said right at the onset, is the first decision to commit or quit. One of the UEs you mentioned is the wallflower. And I always have said to, as I have coached other supervisors to say, look, guys, the bottom line is you'd rather have five people that are spouting out at you and challenge you as opposed to the one wallflower that you're really not quite sure what's going on there. Now, not to confuse that with someone who just is more introverted, shy, needs private time, needs focus, but truly someone who's very detached. That's what you're inferring, right?
Right. And it's easy, especially in some industries, for example, tech or startups, to overlook the contributions of the wallflower. And so, again, a good leader is someone who knows how to facilitate well, to bring in all the voices, because every time you have one person who's not speaking up, you've lost their expertise, you've lost their knowledge, and if they're SME, a SME, in terms of a subject matter expert, you've lost a lot that your organization needs.
Yeah, that's really true. I'm sure we've got some listeners here that are sitting here, you know, listening to the cute quips and names, but they're also probably looking around or mentally reviewing their own organization saying, yeah, that person's a wallflower or they're a slacker. So your advice to us as peers of some of these individuals, you know, how have you seen and individuals constructively raise these concerns to the supervisor? Or even how do you approach a colleague that even says, you know, you're starting to sound like a grumbler? I mean, some of the, you know, how do I step in and maybe go through these five C's as a peer with someone, you know, not to overstep my bounds, but realize it's really going to be that backward reflecting toxicity on me if I don't do something about this.
Exactly. And we actually had a chapter like this, and we took it out due to word length, and it was a peer-to-peer conversation. Mm-hmm. So, again, you have to make sure that you're not stepping on over any boundaries. But this is step two. This is communicate. And so, as you know, when you're having these types of conversations, two things you're really looking at. One is the impact. You're always asking, so I noticed that there's a little difference in your attitude or in your behavior. What's going on? What's the impact of that? And the other thing is to make the I statements. I notice this is what's going on. And what are you noticing? I'm noticing that the meetings have a different tone now. what are you noticing? So you're not pointing the finger at anybody. You're just saying, I'm noticing things are a little different. What are you noticing? Hopefully there's trust and honesty and integrity in the organization. The person will feel comfortable speaking up. And sometimes, as you know, Zara, they don't speak up right away. But, I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing going on. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a week later, can we talk about that again? I've been thinking and watching, and, you know, I know maybe I brushed you off, and I would like the opportunity to talk with you again. All this takes time.
Yeah, I like that. You know, you commented about your colleagues asking you, so, Ann, when are you going to write the next book about the mental boss or the mental client? Because I think that is one of the changes in organizations this day and age, perhaps and more in the past, is this nature of virtual connectedness, that the system goes beyond the walls that I drive to every day, right? Particularly if our teams are not co-located, or that now I have to work with a supplier or deeper into my customers' ranks. Any principles change here then, knowing that you don't necessarily have the formality of an organization structure to rely upon?
My number one recommendation for all of this type of what you're talking about, the connectivity, the remote work, that type of thing, is as much as possible doing it face-to-face, and I even call a Skype conference call with video face-to-face. This is not the type of thing you're going to do by email. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not the type of thing you're going to do by text or by IM chat. This has to have a face-to-face component so that you can see the body language, you can watch the tone of voice, and you don't misread cues. Yet the process works the same, but you do need that face-to-face in the beginning to create that trust. This is a difficult conversation. And then move it forward. You can probably do a little bit by email and figure out how to move forward that way.
Well, and of course, I mentioned in my opening introduction of you, Ann, that you've been named a generational guru, so that is part of your other business model, is helping clients navigate this four generations in the workforce. So I'm sure this type of framework, knowing that you've got now particularly one person from one generation and a different generation, it adds an element of diciness to this as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And when I do my generational work with large organizations, what I do is go through the language that each generation uses. And I'm not talking dude and awesome. I'm talking every generation has its own culture, its own personality, and its own language. So once you understand that as a manager, you're not going to become disingenuous. You're not going to try to become the other person. What you're going to do, though, is to pepper the language, to, as the psychologists say, to get the person to trust you just because of the language. You certainly have not closed the deal yet, Zara, but the person's willing to listen to you. She's like, huh, she's speaking my language. And then you can start to move forward into this framework.
Well, and I think in this day and age, of course, with how many, all of us, regardless of generation, are coming to rely on technology, email, text, and so on, that should be, you know, the opening statement of anything is warning, needs to be face-to-face, you know, so this can cause a different dynamic. And, of course, for any of us that are parents, knowing that some of those best conversations, though, happen when you're in the car where you don't have to make eye contact, but that things can happen, but you're still kind of face-to-face. Face, but maybe not making guy talk to allow some of that freedom. Well, Ann, tell me this book again, and Lore, the book is Managing the Unmanageable, How to Motivate Even the Most Unruly Employee. How is it you think you've changed in the course of helping other people change?
I have done a lot of leadership development work and personal work myself, Zara. I've done a lot of work with Hoffman Institute based in California, Strozzi Institute based in California, as well as had my own executive coach for almost 15 years.
Lovely,
now.
Yeah. So
I know how painful it can be, and I know the rewards of doing the work.
Yep, exactly. Well, I like that the coach wants a coach as much as the student becomes the teacher. So those roles and responsibilities, back to that clarification, is so important. And, Laura, thank you so very much again. Those interested, www.theunmanageableemployee.com to learn about her new book, written and co-wrote with Jezra Kay. We'll look forward to tracking on this, and keep us posted on the impact, Ann. We'll be in touch.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.